This call is being recorded by the meeting organizer. By staying on the call, you are giving your consent to being recorded.
All right. So is everybody still with us, or did you bail because of the recording? The names have been changed to protect the innocent. All right. Thomasina, are you with us?
Yeah, no, I bailed because of the recording.
Okay. Good job. You're a brave woman. So I'm going to turn the agenda over to you, and I hope everyone has the attachment that Thomasina sent out this morning. If not, just send us an email after the call this morning. And to those of you who tuned in just for this particular topic, we won't have our feelings hurt if you get off the call after we talk about public records. So Thomasina, thank you.
Thank you, Dan. In answer to your question earlier, I don't mind if people want to chime in and ask questions as we go along. If you're uncomfortable, you know, asking the question on the line, if you want to shoot me an email, I'll probably see it pop up and try to answer it while we go through everything. But this call is for you all, and to answer your questions and make sure you get the information you need. So please do ask what you would like to ask. I did send out a short handout this morning. It's 3 pages. I tried originally to make it a one-pager, and really I could not. If anyone has ever seen the Government and the Sunshine Manual that the Attorney General's Office does, you'll know it's over 300 pages. This is an area that has a lot of intricacies to it. We have tried to tailor what we're telling you today to the topics that come up most frequently with it, but there's a lot more to it. So with certain areas, we'll probably tell you if you have specific questions or applications regarding application that you should always just reach out and call, because there can be very subtle nuances to it. Before we get started, I'm going to take this opportunity to tell it's a pretty serious and heavy topic, so I'm going to tell a joke first, and it's very rare that I get to tell this story in a context that is so appropriate. But when I first graduated from law school, before I was even admitted to the bar while I was waiting my results, I worked at a law firm who was handling a major public records request. It was a newspaper, and it was on a topic that was being written about in the news a lot. And it was done in Miami, so there was a lot of interest. Packed courtroom, reporters filling the jury box, and my boss at the time had prepared a very detailed memo of law in order to support his argument, which he was just finishing, like lawyers do at the last minute, rushing out to the courtroom, and he had a change made in capitalizing public records. His assistant was flying, she was hurrying, and when she did the change, she accidentally, instead of just capitalizing the words, changed public to cubic and did replace all. So we went into the courtroom with a document that 53 places asked for cubic records requests. So, moral of the story there, don't rely on spell check. Please read what you find because it didn't come up. And I think also as we go along, you'll see there's some more morals to the story about public records. But I've always been amused by that, and I wanted to kind of start off on a lighter note. And Dennis, I think you had some introductory statements you wanted to make too.
Yeah, I think that we've all dealt with it. It has been working for the government for a long time. Any of us, I mean, we've dealt with public records issues, and this isn't the first time that you've dealt with this subject. I'm sure within the context of how we do things at the Guardian Ad Litem, there are a few special issues that you might need to keep in mind, and we're going to touch on some of those as we move through this, but. You know, the thing that I was taught by the OSCA a long time ago regarding public records is don't write down or email anything that you do not want to read in the newspaper. And throughout my career, that's been pretty good advice. And so I'll literally sit at an email. I if you know me, I don't like the email at all. My favorite email to any of you is call me. So I'm just not really a big fan of it. I remember back when email first started, in the legal world, there were some carriers, insurance malpractice carriers, that wouldn't even cover you if you used email for your business. So you're talking to a guy that probably isn't that fond of it anyway. I think you don't write down things unless you want to live with it forever and ever. So with that in mind, what we have generally with the public records law here, the thing you need to keep in mind is, because we are a government entity, and the documents that we generate are going to be public record, and we're going to have to prove our way out of that. We're going to have to find an exception for that if you write it down. Now, the thing to understand about a public record is it is any item that is intended to perpetuate, communicate, or formalize knowledge. Now, that's a technical term, and we put it in the handout that you have here. And so I'm going to just get into something really direct here and quick with you. If you're writing down a note or something like that in your daily business, if you're working in something that we call a working file, which this is a term of art we use in the HR world, to put your notes about your personnel matters that you're not going to put, you don't want to put in their personnel file. You don't want to make formal. It's in your working file. That's an HR term. Those notes are things that are just for your own benefit, for your own reminder. They are not intended to perpetuate, communicate, or formalize knowledge. And at this point, I'm going to do a mea culpa to a colleague out there, because I was at a meeting and I said to this person, and I think this person is probably on the phone, that if it's a draft, it gets protected. We don't have to give them drafts, and that's not necessarily true. If the draft was only something you were working on and you hadn't circulated it around to be finalized by your other colleagues, then that wasn't intended to perpetuate, communicate, or formalize knowledge. That was your own personal sort of notes about what you were working on. But once you start circulating that thing and it's intended to get it into final form, that is going to be a public document. Now, I don't expect anybody to walk away from this understanding all of this, with a razor sharp edge, but that's why we're going to tell you, if you have any questions, call us, and just pick up the phone and call us, because it's worth a conversation if you're feeling that it might be or is, or you're worried about it at all. But again, the default position being, don't write it down unless you absolutely have.
And I want to chime in here on the next portion, and we're following along with what we have written, so if you have that, you can follow with us as well. Point that comes up quite often is the use of home computers, personal email, and cell phones, personal cell phones, to perpetuate information. Public cell phones, everything on it, it's subject. But because you're using a home computer or a personal cell phone does not necessarily mean that that record is going to be exempt. And records are very broadly defined and include text and emails as well as actual documents. So if you are using that home computer or personal cell phone in connection with the transaction of official business, then those documents are public records and they are subject to public records retention requirements. So you have actual duties to perpetuate and save certain things. This has come up a lot. It has come up in the area of leave requests quite a bit. There are people that we have been emphasizing the need to not use text messages or to discuss leave issues or business issues. And
Thomasina? Anyone? Is anyone out there, or have we lost the call?
I'm still here.
We just can't hear Thomasina.
Okay. Thomasina, you're going to have to
Call back in.
Either call back in or take yourself off mute. Something happened here.
Is that working?
No, you're very soft. We can hear you, but barely.
Okay. I'll call
All right,
back.
Now you're back. Now you're back. Okay, everybody go back on mute. Thanks.
Thank you. So my last statement was, was that if you are using your personal cell phone, if you're communicating via text regarding official business, you have to save those records. You have to save those texts. And if not, then you could possibly be in violation of the public records law. And a way that it has come up often is text mails requesting leave. And I think the importance of that is underscored by the audit that we're undergoing right now. Jack is. It's routine audits that they do of different agencies. And one of the specific requests was for documentation of leave requests and how they were, you know, the approvals, the time off, the records matching it. So it is something that does come up. It's not something that there is no need for. So I wanted to emphasize that. The last thing, though, is moving on, is that records that are in existence at the time the request is made is what must be provided. If I ask you today for public records regarding training on the new DCF rule and assessment tool, then only what we have done through today or what we have through today would be needed to be produced. And if we don't have those records, then we don't have to create them for you. We don't have to go back and, you know, get something together. And we don't have to provide it going forward. It's cut off as of the date of the request or an earlier date if specified in the records request. We wanted to, is there any questions on generally what records are public records and what can be requested before we move on? Okay. Once you've identified something as a public record, there are certain statutory exemptions. The only exemptions to public records are those that are legislatively created. The court does not have the ability to do it. Only the ones that are specifically set forth in statute can be enforced. The exemptions that are applicable are narrowly construed. The presumption is that everything can be had. And so you have to be sure that whatever you're doing fits within those exemptions. And the first exemption we wanted to talk about was Chapter 39, confidentiality provisions.
Yes, and this is, of course, the big one for us because it is what we do. It's our operations. And so, when we get public records requests that are going to be seeking the information regarding your court cases, our interpretation of the applicable statute is going to be very broad. We're going to take the broad view. There are other views of it, but the way we read and interpret the statute, which is in front of you there, 390132, Section 4, is that not only do we have the listed items there that we are to protect, but we also, the next section applies any other confidentiality provision in 39 to us as well. So we read it broadly to say that any information about the case which we contain, that is contained in our files or in our offices is going to be protected by Chapter 39, and that will only be released upon order of the court. So you have very broad protection for the material and the information involving the case itself. Then we move into two other exemptions, attorney work product and the like.
The attorney work product exemption is pretty much, or exception, excuse me, is very much in line with the way attorney work product is interpreted throughout any type of law, with the exception, and this is a big one, that the attorney work product exception only applies in the of the litigation. So once that case is over, and that includes any appeals, but once it's final, that public records exception is lost. So while the case is ongoing, you do have protection for the mental impressions, conclusions, litigation strategy, or legal theory of the attorney or the agency that it was prepared for. And it can be prepared for pending litigation or in contemplation of pending litigation. So if you know something is coming but don't have it yet, then it would still be considered pending litigation. In the civil context, an example would be that you're preparing a complaint, but the actual complaint has not yet been filed. You know there's going to be one, so you can apply the exception. With us, say we have an employee who has left and said, I'm going to file a lawsuit. Now we have a pending litigation that we're contemplating. So it doesn't have to actually be filed yet. And it can be the civil proceedings or administrative proceedings. So if we're doing some work for a child that needs extended foster care, then that would also apply in that proceeding. And what's important with the attorney work product privilege, too, is if you share this information, you lose your privilege. So it's only confidential to the extent that you keep it confidential. And so if you're sharing with people that are not involved in the case or not, you know, assigned to it, then I would think, you know, other attorneys in the office, of course, but if you're sharing it outside of the program, then you will, you can lose that privilege.
And so attorney-client work, attorney work product privilege is separate from attorney-client privilege, and this is where it gets really dicey for our organization, okay? And so with what I'm about to tell you, keep in mind there is a distinction between do you have the privilege and can you keep confidential a document that documents information that would be privileged. In the first instance, do we have attorney-client privilege? The answer is yes. We do have attorney-client privilege. But we are a government entity. Our client, you all, are government agents, and you are the clients of our attorneys. And just like when I'm doing general counsel work, and if we have a lawsuit or something like that, I have attorney-client privilege with Alan and Debbie and any of the rest of you that are okay. And then, but when we formalize those meetings and when we write those things down, that is a different story. And under the Florida Public Records Act, that information is considered public record. Because it is the people who are supposed to be, the theory is it is the people that are really supposed to be the client, not the government agents that are acting in the people's stead. So that is the distinction there. So it's tricky and it's difficult. And good attorneys, and our attorneys may, you know, deal with this differently. But, you know, the interplay between these two and how they work, you know, is a question as well. Because if an attorney is writing something in their attorney notes, and that might be attorney-client privilege, there's a work product quality that might also attach to that, which could be protected. The problem is that generally speaking, attorney-client is held by the client, you know, and it seems a little weird that you can't write it down and keep it, but the attorney can possibly keep it. I know it sounds weird and it's complicated, but it would have to be protected as attorney work within the context of attorney work product. Not as attorney client.
I'm sorry. Our advice here would be don't email your lawyer. If you have a question about a case, pick up the phone, walk down the hall, whatever it may be, talk to that person. Don't start an email chain because once that is in email, that is no longer privileged.
And it was the same would go for the lawyer too. I mean, because the lawyer can email, and we do a lot of emailing. You know, I mean, everybody does a lot of emailing here. It's just the way of the world, and it's hard to think about it, I guess, in this way. But but it works both ways because, you know, an attorney can provoke a response as well. So, I mean, everybody just needs to work together to understand this piece. And so I know that can be a bit frustrating, confusing. And let me say this, our intent here is not to have any effect on your cases whatsoever. I personally do not view every request for information by the parties in your case as a public records request in your Chapter 39 proceeding. Now, somebody along the line might come along and say, well, it really is, but that's not. I would not change your practices in your cases right now. The reason why it's coming up is in a variety of places, or at least in a few places here lately, we've had some media requests, and those folks tend to be very, you know, aggressive about pushing the boundaries of the public records law. And so with that in mind, we felt it was timely to give you this refresher on it. And just so you know, there's nothing that we're concerned about that right now, but it just seems like it's a good time for us to talk to you all about it right now. I think, do you think that's enough between, because I think that really, I think the bottom line, the takeaway is, and you're talking to a guy who doesn't like to do it anyway, just don't email or write things down that you would consider in this realm unless you absolutely have to. And a note about attorney work product and attorney notes. While the attorney notes are generally considered attorney work product out in the world, I don't want to drill down into too hyper-technical here. Under the Florida Records Act, again, going back up and looking at the definition of what a public record is, not only could that attorney note be work product, that also could not be a public record itself.
And that's true. You have to determine what is a public record, because if they're just notes to yourself and not intended to perpetuate, then you do not get that necessarily public record definition, so it might not fall within it first. Once you are at public records and determining if there is an exception, there is the work product exception, but the exception only lasts as long as the litigation does. So it is a two-step analysis. It's not one step.
And a final note on that, and not to get in, I mean, because attorney-client privilege and attorney work product, we could spend days talking about this and going back and forth. But in our, just from a personal note, in our private practice, Thomasina more than myself has experienced civil cases where the notion out in the world is every single thing that transpires between an attorney and their client is privileged, and that is not necessarily so even out there in the civil, you know, private world. I mean, Thomasina has been in huge cases where the attorneys have claimed privilege, and the rule of thumb has been, all right, do a privilege log all of these documents that contain your alleged privilege, and the judge has gone down the documents and said, this is privilege, this is not. This is privilege, this is not. So, you know, there's that anyway, but this call, we don't want to necessarily, we can get into that some other time if we need to. That has not been a problem in my experience with this organization, but just for your background information, that is also something that does occur.
Does anybody have any questions on that aspect of this, either work product or attorney-client? Okay. Then I'm going to move on to the next section we have, which is DAO volunteer. Dennis pointed out it should say personnel information, and that includes DAO volunteer. But we do have a statutory exemption that was put in place for all of our employees and for our volunteers that make certain information confidential, including home addresses, telephone numbers, places of employment, dates of birth, photographs, and that also includes that information for spouses and children of the personnel and the volunteers, which have been made exempt. The tricky portion of this is that the personnel or the volunteer had to have requested or taken steps to keep that information confidential,
We ask our volunteers if they have done that when they sign up, but we don't police it. We don't have a duty to police it under the statute. It really would be impossible to do, but you do have to take some steps as employees to show that you have tried to protect your information. That could include having an unlisted phone number. That could include having checks that do not list your home address. So there's different ways to do it, but you do right now have to undertake that step in order to qualify for the exemption. There's some other miscellaneous personal information exemptions that are contained in subsection 5 of the records request statute, which also makes confidential for everybody the Social Security numbers and biometric information, which is the fingerprints that we obtain. So those are always kept confidential as well. And so there are at times other exemptions which may arise in particular situations, but these are the ones you're going to see most often in our daily practice. All right, so the next question then becomes how to request records in Florida. And there's no real set form for how to request records. It can be done in writing. It can be done by the telephone. It can be done in person. Someone can come to the office and say, I want to see these documents. There is a group that actually wanted to test responsiveness to public records requests and did a project where they called offices during the lunch hour to see what was being done to ensure that records requests were received and responded to. There was not a good response level for agencies as a whole, according to that report, but it's just something to note. It can be done anytime, and it has to be received and processed. If you do get a verbal request for records, you should ask the person making the request if they don't mind putting it in writing for you so that you can make sure that you are completely responsive to the request. That's okay. If they decline, you can't make them, but you can ask them. And they also do not have to tell you why they're asking. They don't have to have a reason. It's their absolute right to ask. And so they can just say, I want this information, and nothing more is needed. By statute, the request is supposed to go to the custodian of the public records. Our custodian is Deborah Irvin. If you receive a public records request, you should immediately send it to her. Now, these are different from documents like requests to produce within a case. Those will probably still stay within just the circuit and handled as part of the litigation. When in doubt, send it on. And that should be done as quickly as possible because although the Act doesn't have a set time frame, there can be damages or actions brought if the agency does not provide the documents within a reasonable time. So you do have to make sure we're doing these somewhat quickly. Does anybody have any questions on that section? All right. I'm going to go next into records retention. Records retention is not exactly the same thing as public records, but they two overlap. Records retention policies tell us how long we have to keep a public record on file in order to be able to produce it for a party that's asking for it or just a member of the public. Section 119 designates the Division of Library and Information Services of the Department of State to establish rules and procedures for disposal of public records. We are subject to what is called GS1 SL, which is for state and local records. Recently, we sent out a document on that to kind of give you some guidance on it. If you need that again, let us know. We can recirculate it. But we are also subject to the records retention requirements of court rules and the rules regulating the Florida Bar, as all of our legal records would fall within that. If there's conflict between the two, then the longer time frame should prevail, and you should keep it as long as necessary to meet either of the two of them. We've also, in that handout we circulated, it also addresses those record retention requirements, and again, this is something that if you have any questions, contact admin services. And also, and this is important, this is the one question we were asked regarding going paperless. The Division of Library Sciences has also the duty to establish a disposal process. There are strict
procedures that have to be followed pursuant to statute before you can destroy a public record. I think it's Section 257 governs it, but it's a process. It's not something where that you can just do. And as an agency, we have to make sure that if you're going paperless and you want to do that, that you are following that statutory provision. I believe what we are going to do is establish first a process for doing it within finance and, you know, get that down, going through that, and then share that with the circuits that want to go paperless. But in the meantime, you should be preserving records and not destroying them until we are sure that we are doing it in accordance with that statutory section. So, this, again, if you have any questions, send them to admin services. So Debbie, you can call me, Amy, Felicia, whoever, you know, you get a hold of or are comfortable talking to, we'll all be happy to help you. Does anybody have any questions there? I heard a beep. Okay.
Hi, Messina. This is Laurie with the Second Circuit.
Can
I talk to you about that?
Yes.
Because we are paperless, and I'd like a little bit more detail and guidance on that.
Okay,
thank you.
You're welcome. And again, anybody that wants to talk separately, call me, email me, however you want to do it, and you know, we'll get back with you. And so the last two things, but we wanted to go over remedies available in the state. There are agencies out there, or groups, not agencies, that do nothing but serve public records requests in the hopes of catching agencies. And, you know, either saying they're not fast enough or didn't give me something I'm entitled to. There was one group called Fog Watch, and the head of that group, that was his manner of making a living, was to file records requests and then file lawsuits when there wasn't compliance. So, you know, it is something that we need to be aware of. We've always handled it. He sent us one, and we never heard anything more from it. So I think that we do well as an organization in responding to requests, but just want you to know that that's out there. And then there's some other remedies.
Just to make sure you're aware, any violation of the public records law, you could be subject to a $500 fine for the individuals that the public officer who violated the records law. And if it's a knowing violation, of course, you're looking at criminal penalties and a fine of up to $1,000. So just keep, you know, I mean, it's serious, and that's why we have to demonstrate that we're taking reasonable steps in order to make sure that we're doing it correctly. But along those lines, this is not stuff you have to do on your own. You have access to Deborah. A lot of this goes to personnel and Amy and Felicia as well, and you have access to me and Thomasina, and together all of us have done a very good job of responding to public records requests, and we have never to this point had a problem either responding to a public records request, getting the folks everything they need, taking care of it in a professional manner that's consistent with the statute. So if we communicate and stay in touch, I don't think we have anything to worry about with this.
The last thing we wanted to touch on was pending legislative changes. There's an act pending in front of the legislature right now. They went over public records law in accordance with Sunshine Act reviews, and they have written the statute to eliminate the reasonable steps required to protect public records, and so that may go away. We're watching it, but for the time being, that's still there, and we still, all of us that want to keep records private, need to watch that. I think one area where it's come up recently is voter registration records are really available much more online now. And if you don't tell, for instance, the Office of Elections that you don't want that or you're entitled to the exemption, then you may Google yourself and find yourself coming up on some public records on voter registrations where private companies are making this available to everybody on the internet.
Yeah, and I hopefully they'll pass that regulation and we'll eliminate that portion from our requirements. So
that's kind of it in a nutshell, and I just wanted to open it up. Now we have another 5 minutes or so that we have set aside for this. Does anybody have any questions they'd like to ask?
I just wanted to mention, Thomasina, this is Debbie, that, you know, for those of you who may have, you know, who may get walk-ins asking for public records or telephone calls asking for public records, your primary obligation is to ensure the requester that we will comply with the public records law and provide them everything that they're entitled to. It's always good when you get that kind of a request to come to me so that I can help get the proper guidance from HR or from the general counsel's office as far as what we provide and how we provide it and appropriate redaction if necessary. So you can simply inform the requester that we have a process that we go through our records custodian. We'll be glad to get them what they're asking for. If they're willing to put it in writing, that's terrific. If not, then make your own notes and get that to me, and we'll follow up just as quickly as practical. The other thing I wanted to mention is that folks are always shocked when we get records requests about our volunteers. And while this doesn't happen a lot, it does happen from time to time when a party is disgruntled about the direction that their case is taking and they want to find some fault with a GAL staff person or perhaps a volunteer. And so they will ask for their record. Much of the information that's in a volunteer's file deals with their reference checks and their background checks with respect to their initial application. Some of that material is protected by Chapter 39, which spells out the requirements for a background check on a GAL. Other pieces of it are not. So it's always good, again, to let me know. We'll work with you to make sure that we redact anything that can be redacted. An individual off the street can't come in and get a phone number and a home address, but they can get other information about our volunteers, and our volunteers' names are not exempt from public record. Any other questions on this topic? I thought you guys would have lots of questions. Well, Dennis and Thomasina, thank you so much for the preparation. I know that folks will probably be contacting y'all offline a good bit because they're shy since this is being recorded. I'm going to take us off recording right now, and so you'll hear a little operator thing, and then we'll get on with the rest of the agenda. Those of you who need to get off, you know, you can feel free to do that or stay with us as you choose.